Lady and gentlemen, welcome to the 11th and the only 11th episode of Tavern Tussle. Are your combat encounters feeling a bit bland?
Are the monsters in the monster manual just not cool enough?
Is your big bad evil guy just too predictable?
Do you want to know how to spice up the combat encounters in your weekly game? Find out this week on Tavern Tussle.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. Episode 11. Man, we've been doing this for a while now. It's been going on. But yeah, but as always, I'm Cam Bams, and I'm joined by...
Karateka, or Christian. Yeah, everyone knows.
we gotta pick one, man. So, D&D Land has been a terrifying place as of late. Our weekly game came and went. Andy's still DM, and my Goliath Rogue, Egon Crow Kieran Tornico, is no more. The brutal double one critical failure took his life. I mean, the Hill Giant was going to kill him anyway, I think.
We really botched that plan.
Yeah, we did, but what are you going to do? My Rogue is no more. That's all I can say. I'm super sad. Like, seriously, that was, like, my favorite character I think I've ever made. He was just so full of life, and he was interesting, and he was fun to play, and...
I mean, you were, like, really into him. Like, the whole, like, when it was time, like, you know, when the game started, boom, you were no longer Cam Bams. It was over.
Yeah, I've never felt a connection to a character like I did him. Now that he's gone, I feel like it's like that last day of high school where you know you're never going to see your best friend ever again because he's moving to Alaska. That's what it feels like. I didn't have a best friend that moved to Alaska.
Like that I didn't have that experience either.
No, yeah. That was just an analogy.
920. That doesn't work in 29 Palms. But no. This is a black hole. Your best friend that you've known for the last 10, 15 years... is still your best friend in this town for the next 10 to 15 years.
You live here, you work here, you die here. But no, I mean, everything else, though. So the party got hired to kill some hill giants. Egon set up the job with a thieves guild that was in the town. Egon dies. So now the party just burned his body and is forgetting about that job and moving on.
Well, I mean, we did... scout ahead to find out it is a clan of giants, and there's just it ain't happening. It is not happening at this current moment in time.
Egon died for nothing. His death was in vain. That's fine.
It was not in vain. We slaughtered that giant.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's still sad. My next character is going to be a human blood hunter, I think. Yeah, because I never know. Like, I'm still getting over the death of Egon, so now I'm, like, not going to make a new character and connect with it, and blah, 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 blah. And I'm just, man, what, like, how do you follow that up? You know, how do you follow up a character that you put so much passion and soul into, you know?
I'm just saying that gnome.
Aaliyah's very against the Southern accent. I was about to say, Aaliyah, gnome.
When you hear this, I'm telling him right now to make that gnome.
It's gonna happen eventually. We'll see. We will see. I will update next week after we play what I actually finally chose. But my ability scores I rolled are amazing.
Oh my god.
I got like 2 17s, a 16, a 15. My lowest one is 9. It was like the very last one I rolled, but that's okay. I can be bad at something and just amazing at everything
fucking
else.
Fucking demigod level.
For real. Like, I was sitting there rolling, I was like, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. So we'll see. We'll see. But yeah, but this week we're talking all about combat. So last week we told you how to spice up your towns and cities Now we're going to tell you how to spice up your combat. And to get into that, you have to think about what is the reason for combat in your game? Because there's got to be some kind of overarching evil, you know, affectionately called the big bad evil guy. And I think I have a solution to having that guy be not so bland. Because as a DM, you know, you're role-playing 26 people. You're the tavern owner. You're the shopkeeper. You're the shepherd. You're the little beggar children in the street. Like, you're everyone. And so when it comes to the big bad evil guy, you can't be expected to be put, you know, as much thought and effort into role-playing him because you're planning everything else. So what I say you do, you take a friend who's an experienced role player who can't play in your game, you know, for whatever reason, and you make him decide, or her, decide what the big bad evil guy does. You know, so every week you tell them, like, oh, my players did this in my game, and they'll tell you how the big bad evil guy reacts and what he does.
I really think that's a badass idea. Like, obviously, you'd be more like a team, like a team ship, like you and that non-player person who is role-playing your big bad evil guy. Obviously, if he was like, yeah, I'm going to react in this way, and it totally derails an idea, you kind of have to, you know, communicate. But yeah, no, that'd be totally badass.
I mean, yeah, because you're not, as a DM, you can't be biased towards the evil guy because, you know, you're working together with the party to, like, form the story and play the game. But if you have that third party that's not part of the game, his only sole intention is the big bad evil guy succeeding. So it'll make it more interesting because, you know, and having another head in the whole DM planning stage will give you the ability to bounce ideas off each other.
Yes.
And then, you know, they may think of things that you never even thought of. And so you're like, oh my God, of course Strahd would do that, blah, blah, blah.
I mean, I think that is a very important thing to have someone to bounce ideas off of. Because, like you said, you have, I mean, even saying you role-played 26 characters as a DM is on the shorthand side, maybe per town,
yeah,
if you're lucky. But, yeah, no, you have 1,000 things going on in your mind, you're like, and then you're also thinking about the main plot, like the biggest, baddest guy and what he's doing while 50,000 other things are going on. And even if that other player isn't completely controlling your villain or whatever you want to call him, but to bounce ideas off of him and be like, yeah, I know my players did this, this, and this, and I was going to react like this because that's just how your thought process went. But then they're like, you got that other person who's like, well, what about this? And you're like, oh, fuck, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And I can tie that in.
And it just becomes that much more interesting because then when you actually present that idea to your players as a situation, they're going to think like, oh, my God, like, you're a wizard. Like, how did you think of that? Because you've been doing all this stuff and all of a sudden you also have time to think about this and blah, blah, blah. And then it just makes you look really good as a DM. You know, because they don't need to know. Because then they'll text your friend. They'll be like, hey, bro, listen. We haven't found the sun sword yet. So what's Strahd doing right now? it's just one of those things. I think that not only will spice up your combat because the person will help you decide, like, when they show up and how they show up and stuff, but it also helps you just spice the entire storyline. Because now you don't have to worry about that guy per se, and you can focus on all the little encounters and little side story arcs that are going on in the game. So it just, you know, frees you up time to be more creative about the things that maybe don't matter as much to the overarching story. And then you also have to think about the little enemies that you're up against, you know, like that pack of goblins or hobgoblins or, you know, those couple vampire spawn that you find in a barn. I have Curse of Strahd on the brain.
Yeah, I can tell.
That's what you're running. So I was like, oh, man. I can't wait until you start running that game, by the way. Just 2 more weeks.
It's going to be badass.
Dos weekos. I don't know how to say weeks.
I have no idea.
Aaliyah's been teaching me some Spanish. Yo no puedo. That means I can't.
If I want to learn Spanish, I have to ask Maddie's parents.
Yeah.
Who we'll both learn Spanish speak together. Fluent Spanish. And she does not.
Yeah, because, I mean, I need to learn Spanish because when we have kids, Aaliyah's going to talk to them in Spanish. And then I'm going to be, you know, the dumb white guy who doesn't know Spanish. And so they're going to say stuff to me and I'm not going to know what it is. And
my
I'm just going to say yes.
My son's going to know more Spanish than me. Yeah, he's going to, like, cuss me out in Spanish. I'm not even going to know. And I'm going to be like, haha, that's funny. Like, yeah. Actually, it's not. he just called you a punk.
I love you too, son. I love you too. But anyway, back to the topic at hand. So when you're fighting a group of enemies and they're speaking Spanish and you don't understand them kind of thing, it gets to a point where one side of the conflict is going to be winning. You know, if you're fighting a group of orcs and the party member is just slaughtering them left and right kind of thing, what is keeping those last few orcs there? Like, do they have a reason that's strong enough for them? Like, because they know they're going to die. They've seen the party in action. They know that the tables have turned. They lost superior numbers. Why are they still there? I say if you believe an enemy knows they're going to die and they don't want to, then have them run away. You know, goblins will run away. Orcs will run away. You know, it's one of those things. Like, even a dragon.
Oh, yeah, I was about to say, even, like, fucking, it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to even be tiny enemy. Or an archmage who realize they always have an escape route. Yeah. They always have some hidden door or some teleport or something prepared. Because if things go south, nobody wants to die. And no one's, okay, I shouldn't say nobody wants to die. Maybe there's, you know, that person who's like, yeah, when I die, I'm going to be with my demon lord. Like, okay, cool, whatever. Yeah. You can go
you
die.
You always have those weirdos.
But most people don't want to die and aren't just going to face it willy-nilly and be like, all right, kill me now.
Yeah, and so an ending combat abruptly like that gives it a new kind of flavor, because then the players like feel like, oh wow, like, yeah, we're so badass they're scared of us. Mm-hmm. But then some people maybe will, you know, that sucks because we just lost out on that experience, or, you know, I really just wanted to kill that guy.
Well, you can always chase him down.
Yeah, but if they, like, a mage teleports away and you don't have a way of teleporting.
Oh yeah, not them, but if they're like on, if they're on feet and they're running away.
Yeah. My big thing about that though is if you do end combat abruptly, you need to give the party closure later. You know, if those goblins do run away, well, guess what? Now they show up with a couple orcs they were working with, kind of thing. Like, sometimes, like, if bandits rob them on the road and a couple of them decide to run, like, they're probably not going to come back. But if it's, like, a story element and the party doesn't, you know, defeat all the enemies, then have a little payoff in the end, you know? Allude to what happened to them, or have them show back up with superior numbers again, or a different strategy kind of thing. And then if that group does run away and they make it back to their lair, don't have the party show up and the enemies have made no preparation whatsoever.
They're like, hey guys, we just got slaughtered. Yeah, that happened. Okay, cool, let's party. Yeah. Now, I totally like the idea of, like, if one or two goblins or whatever get away, run back to their hideout, cave, camp, whatever the case may be, like, they're either setting up an ambush, setting up traps, calling in for reinforcements, like, whatever the case may be, they don't just go back and nothing happens.
Exactly. Like, you have to make it the party's actions of slaughtering part of their number, whatever they are, had an effect on their base of operations. Because now they're putting up defenses. They, like you said, they're setting up traps. And that's one thing that a lot of Dungeon Masters don't think of when they're doing combat. Do not be afraid to use traps. Because, yeah, like, it seems unfair and, you know, it's a little biased kind of thing, but it's interesting. If you're fighting in a cave network and they've set up the ceiling to collapse on part of the map just in case, do not be afraid to trigger that, you know, trap. Like, have the ceiling cave in on the party. Now they have to find another way around to get to the rest of them before the blood sacrifices in the bottom chamber of the cave happen. Like, it's just, it's interesting. Especially if they're traps that the players don't really expect. You know, like, they see all the enemies in front of them. The enemies don't seem to notice them. The party charges forward, and all of a sudden, oh my god, poison dart traps in the walls just start going off as the enemies turn around and laugh.
I like pitfall traps.
Or like a pitfall trap. Yes. Yeah. Do not be afraid to use traps in the middle of combat, because it changes the map, and it's an interesting flair that just, you know, adds a little spice to the whole encounter, because all of a sudden it's not just this bland, I'm going to take a turn hitting you. Okay, now you take a turn hitting me. I'll take a turn hitting you. No, now there is a boulder literally rolling around the map that you have to avoid.
You know what's cool? Say in the middle of combat, like, both sides are flustered. Like, you know, things are flying, spells, arrows. People are stabbing people with daggers, whatever the case may be. Here's a cool aspect. Sure, say a goblin or his tribe or whatever set up some traps. What if he was so flustered he forgot about a trap and triggered it himself? You can roll for that. Like, yeah. Say he's, like, so flustered, and you could roll to see how, like, discombobulated he is, and maybe he forgets that there's a trap somewhere, steps on a pressure plate, or, you know, triggers a rope trap, or whatever the case may be. Boom, he hits himself with his own trap. That'd be fucking awesome.
Exactly. Like, it's so dynamic, and things like that could have this little, like, comedic effect on combat. They're usually just so cut and dry with turn order and all that stuff. Like, if you see a goblin all of a sudden set off a pitfall trap he forgot was there, then yeah, it's comedic, and now you have a goblin prisoner, you know? It's just, yeah, it's not bad to throw in unusual elements into your combat encounters. Because one, it'll be more interesting, and two, like, you will also look better as a DM, because you're like, oh my god, that was awesome. You know, until they all fall into a pit trap, and then they're like, okay, what do we do now? But it's just one of those things that can add flavor to everything. And then don't be afraid to mix up the makeup of whatever enemy group the party is fighting against. It can get a little hectic when you start putting, you know, like, there's so many archers, and there's so many melee combatants, and they have all these different weapons, and the spellcasters know all these spells. But at the same time, like, when you think about it, like, if you have a herd of Goliaths going around the countryside, they're not all going to use the same weapon.
Herd of Goliaths, and they all use great axes. That's it.
Exactly. Like, that's so lame.
They all wear the same loincloth, even though they have different sized dicks.
Okay. You're missing Egon. I can see. Yeah, no, but... So, yeah, your melee fighters, you know, have some of them use great axes, great swords. But then there's that one guy who just is dual-wielding clubs because he just feels like Conan the Barbarian. That's fucking badass.
It's not rapiers. It's not daggers. It's two clubs.
Yeah, dude.
Like, he's ready to fucking pummel.
And they're not even, like, real clubs or tree branches. You know, like, he just feels that close to nature. He has to use two tree branches to just murder people.
They robbed some, like, recent caravan. He just broke two legs off of a chair. Boom.
See? And that's interesting, because as soon as he dies and the party's like, oh, I'm going to loot the bodies. Yeah, he has a loincloth, a coin purse with 6 silver pieces, and he seemed to be wielding 2 chair legs as makeshift clubs. Yeah, it's just interesting, because then it shows you took the time to think and prepare. And not just be like, oh yeah, all the archers have short bows and all the melee guys have long swords. You know, like, I understand if it's like uniform, like they're taking on like castle guard or something, then yeah, it's like part of the uniform. But when you think about it, like, the adventuring party doesn't all use the same weapons. You know, so why would the enemy party use the same weapons? And don't be afraid to mix up the enemies themselves. Like, if you're fighting cultists or whatever, that follows some devil, like archdevil, then those cultists could also enlist the help of, you know, imps or lesser demons and stuff. So you're not just fighting all these humans who are like melee or spellcasters, but all of a sudden you're starting to fight like little demons and stuff. You know, like make it make sense. Like don't have like an ogre all of a sudden be fighting alongside like werewolves and stuff. Just because that, I mean, it could make a lot, you could make sense. You know, I'm not telling you how to run your story, but I'm just saying like, don't make it all goblins.
I'm thinking like right now how that'd work out, and there would have to be some like mind domination type shit going on, like some like badass wizard, and he's just mind fucking random shit.
Or it is a pack of werewolves. They do have an ogre, but you don't know until you get the ogre's HP down to half that he's actually also a werewolf. So now you have this werewolf ogre.
Were ogre. Oh my god!
Right.
That's an, I mean, oh, no, we haven't talked about that yet. You can freaking, if it's in the monster manual, say you have werewolves, you have ogres. If you want to make a damn were-ogre, just look at both of the stat blocks and fucking pick and choose what you want to make. Boom, slap it together and you got your fucking self a badass sandwich.
Yeah.
Like,
and for the more complex combat encounters, think about the party makeup. You know, usually parties have like the Holy Trinity, the tank, the damage, the healer kind of thing. Well, why wouldn't the enemies also have a healer? You know, that I don't remember the last time I did a combat encounter. I feel
like
that
is so often just like overlooked or disregarded.
Yeah.
Like the only people who have healers are the adventuring party. No, nobody else in the plane of existence has a healing, member.
If I'm fighting a group of orcs as a player and all of a sudden I see one orc dressed in like tribal garb go up and like heal a warrior that I thought was dead, all of a sudden I'm like, holy shit,
like, orc tribes have fucking shamans.
Exactly,
that's their freaking job. Are you like, telling me no orc raiding party doesn't have a damn shaman with them?
Yeah, so make sure your complex combat encounters have all the elements that the party also has, because that, for one, it raises the difficulty, because then all of a sudden you have someone throwing out healing spells, so it changes the dynamic completely, because now they're going to try to focus the healer kind of thing. But also it makes your world seem more lifelike, because you're like, oh my god, these, for one, all these orcs aren't using just axes and clubs. For two, they have a spellcaster with them. That's crazy. Three, they're working with hobgoblins and wolves, which is badass. And next, they have a shaman healing everyone. Like, what? Like, boom. All of a sudden, you're like DM God.
You can even surprise them. Like, your next combat encounter, throw in a healer. And they'll be like, oh, that guy's healing. But they're just so used to fighting the other people. They're just going to keep fighting him. And this guy's just going to keep healing. And they're like, and then finally, it clicks in their head. Oh, shit, this is new. I better go take that guy out, or I'm just never going to kill these other people.
Yeah, and most enemies who are organized, like tribes of something, they got that way because they're smart in battle. If you have a cleric in your party and every turn he's healing someone, well, now all those ranged enemies are going to start focusing him. You know, like, they're smart. Do not be afraid to target either the biggest damage dealers or the support characters of your party.
Like, and that, like, spellcasters, if someone's in the back freaking shooting fireballs and they're like, and he's just leveling, you know, little groups of orcs, and the archers are just like, oh nope, that fighter's on the front lines, I'm gonna shoot all my arrows at him. Oh yeah, we'll just fucking disregard that guy, he's just killing people, whatever, this is how combat goes.
Because usually parties have, you know, an idea of how combat's going to go. Like, oh, we're going to send the barbarian in, everyone's going to focus on him, then we'll pew, 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 pew. But now all of a sudden your cleric's getting shot, and like your wizard takes like three arrows to the eye, and you're just like, what is happening?
Yeah.
This combat encounter is so complex.
And then it makes it badass because a lot of the times the wizard is, or any caster in general, is just throwing out damage spells. He's not using like freaking stone form or like any kind of like blur or, you know, yeah. like defensive abilities, because he's just like, yeah, I just sit in the back and I just shoot missiles all damn day. No, 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 I don't think so. You better start using some defensive abilities or you're going to be dead.
Exactly. And then spice up your initiative rolls. We talked about different initiative things in a previous episode, but going along with that is don't have all the enemies go at once. You know, if there's five enemies, have two go at one point, have two go at another point, and then the last one go to a different one. Or you can even split it up, you know, like the ranged will go, and then the melee will go, and then like the boss of the enemies will go after that. Like, don't have it to where you like party member, all the enemies, party member, just because that gets kind of boring pretty quickly.
And that could be catastrophic. Because depending on how many, the number of enemies, I mean, it also depends on the DM, but say, like you said, you throw that one barbarian in, and it's the first round of combat, there's 10 enemies, and the DM doesn't think about it because that barbarian's the closest thing to all the enemies, so all 10 enemies attack the barbarian, that could be a death in the first round.
Yeah.
Because characters didn't have the chance to, you know, take an action yet.
Yeah, to react to what was going on and everything. And I'm not saying you have to roll initiative for every single enemy, because some combat encounters, you know, they're fighting 20 to 25 things. But if you just split them up into groups and have them go, you know, at different times, then it makes it more interesting. It's not just, you know, that turn-based, I hit you, now you hit me, now I hit you. Oh, shit, now he's hitting me right after you? Like, what?
And it's more give and take, too, because the players are reacting to that one group that just went, and then the DM's reacting to the one or two players that reacted after that group just went, and now the next group's going to go. It kind of gives, like, more dynamics to the combat.
Exactly, and it makes players have to think about what they're doing during the combat, and not just, oh, I'm going to attack with the same attack I've used the last 12 rounds.
As soon as a game, just like, well, anything in life, as soon as it becomes mindless, it becomes boring. Mm-hmm. And that could be the end of a game.
Exactly. So just spicing up initiative order can do so. I keep saying spice up, and it's bothering the shit out of me. Like, why, man? I sound so lame.
Spice it up.
Like I'm Guy Fieri. Or something. Fieri, however you say his name. Whatever. But your combat doesn't have to end when all the enemies are dead. It can end long before that. You know? What are some ways that you could end a combat encounter before death has taken everyone?
I mean, before death has taken everyone, if you have some crazy barbarian hacking and slashing, dismembering body parts, have him intimidate the rest of the pack. Kind of, you actually talked about that earlier. If you see this one person slaughtering people, and they're not the other enemies that are still alive aren't just going to be like, oh, that okay, cool. Like we still got this. He single-handedly just killed five goblins, and there's three left, and they're like, I think we can take
them. We go next.
I think we got this. No, yeah. Like, have him make an intimidation roll, or say you have a, you know, smooth-talking rogue. Maybe he persuades them that, you know, they don't want to fight, or maybe he persuades them there's a better cause. Maybe he's like, why attack us when you can go attack these guys? I mean, it doesn't even have to be like, you can, depending on your party's alignment, yeah. You know, there's a lot of things you can throw in there.
I mean, because the whole thing about combat with a lot of D&D games is people forget to roleplay during combat. Because they're like, oh, I've roleplay, combat encounter, okay, tactics. But you...
And it's not over until everyone's dead. Exactly. One side has to be completely dead before you stop swinging your axe and throwing magic missiles.
Yeah, but just like if the party starts to get defeated, they're going to try to think of ways to save their own lives. The enemies are going to be the same way. If there is another way to end the combat without dying, they might just take it. So role-playing during combat will, you know, help move things along. Because if it's, like, near the end of combat and you're just, you know, going in turn order and no one's really hitting anybody or stuff's just taking too long to die kind of thing, but you know who's going to win, like, what side's going to win. Like, you as a DM can step in and on the turn of an enemy, you know, instead of attacking or even running, like, you use your turn to role play kind of thing.
And I kind of like, there's always that option to be like more of a diplomat. What if this problem has been a revolving door for 50 years? This, you know, group of enemies is constantly attacking this town, and they're not a small group. They are a full-on tribe. And say you, instead of going the route of just killing everybody, you in the middle of combat, you're like, wait a minute, like, let me talk to your leader. Like, there's a way to solve this. There's people dying on your side, there's people dying on our side. Do you just want this to continue for eternity? And, you know, and maybe you make a damn, I mean, it may be unheard of, but maybe you make a damn treaty, you know, between the town and the group of orcs. Maybe because they're better hunters and gatherers and fishermen, you know, the orcs are, and maybe they can supply those type of materials to the town, but the town's better at industry or, you know, making devices or whatever the case may be, and they can supply new technologies to the orcs to better their lives, you know, whatever the case may be. Maybe a weird option. I'm not saying it's going to work, but it's an option nonetheless.
Yeah, and you always have to be open as a player and a DM to ways of ending combat that aren't normal kind of thing. Like, you can't just, you know, if a player is sitting there trying to persuade this last ogre to just stop hitting them with a club, don't just be like, the ogre doesn't care and hits you again. Like, give it some thought. Like, maybe the ogre wants something.
Have them roll their damn dice. That's what it's for.
Yeah.
Roll persuasion. Roll an intimidation. Roll charisma. Exactly. Or just a general charisma.
Yeah, roll performance.
Yeah.
You know? Like, don't get stuck in the mindset that everyone has to die or run away for combat to end. Like, you can role play your way through combat as well. That's not unheard of. Egon Crow did it. It's still fresh. The wound is still fresh. But whatever. And then magic items in combat. So usually you delve into a dungeon, you kill everything, and then you find the treasure room.
The one thing about magic items, I feel like a lot of people forget, a plus one sword. Plus one. That's considered a magic item. It doesn't have to be a fucking flame tongue weapon.
Yeah, like, true.
It can be a plus one sword, plus one leather armor, plus one plate armor, like plus one shield, like whatever the case may be. There are so many things that, and obviously you want to scale it to their level. And that's kind of a reward. And you can always throw like the story in there. I know we've been using this a lot, but say it's goblins. They just raided some, you know, traveling caravan, and somebody happened to be carrying a nice sword. So boom, they fucking snatch that shit, and then you kill the goblin, and then, you know, it's like a chain of custody.
Yeah, because that's a point I was trying to make, is that the party has magical items. So do the enemies. Like, the enemies don't have all these magical items in a room and not use them. You know, like, no, it's not.
The magic items in the world are only contained in chests.
That's what I'm saying. Like, all these kobold tribes are just, they have all these plus one swords and shields in their closets, but they would never use them. No. Like, once you set apart an enemy, like, yeah, you have all your grunts, and then that leader orc, you know, once you set him apart, and all of a sudden he has this battle axe that he throws at the party, and it instantly comes back to him. That's badass. It's, no, because usually you would kill him, and then in the closet you find this battle axe that you throw, and it comes back to you. But no, if you actually have someone use all the magic items in the place, Like, yeah, like, don't have all the coin and potions and scrolls and stuff beyond all the enemies. But the actual usable items, that cloak of invisibility that you had planned for the bard or the rogue or whatever, like, hey, like, someone's using that, you know? Just because magic items at a certain point become a hindrance to planning. Because then all of a sudden, you come up with this great plan. You're like, oh my god, I have the best skill check encounter ever. You forgot you gave the paladin winged boots. And he just flies over it. So you're like, oh shit. You know? Like, or there's a girl in your party who just really, really wants braces of archery. The thing is, the archer shooting at her is wearing braces of archery. You know? It's just one of those things. And we'll talk about magic items in a later episode because we can go on and on and on.
The only, like, the one thing I thought, I actually thought about this today. I mean, I thought about it before, but, like, I was reminded of it today. Like, one cool thing, I mean, obviously, this would be more of a DM side, but one cool thing you could do is whether it be, it has to be consumable items. Say you do encounter somebody, and before the battle starts, they have 3 healing potions. And depending on how fast you kill that enemy, he may still have 3 healing potions, or he may have 0 healing potions. You know what I'm saying? Like, start it to where it's like kind of a reward system on how tactic and how fast they're able to defeat this enemy. But if he takes one of the potions, they lose one of the potions. If he takes 2 of the potions, they lose 2 of the potions. And if it's like, maybe it's special arrows, poison arrows, whatever the case may be, as he fires them, those are no longer usable. And yeah, sure, you would have gotten 10 poison arrows, but he used 5 of them, so now you get 5.
Yeah, and that just, it makes sense that the enemies would use the loot that the players are going to get.
And then make it look like it. Like, well, obviously, if a player gets hit by a poison arrow, they're going to know they got hit by a poison arrow because they're poisoned. But, I mean, make it apparent that they are using these items that they can get if they accomplish this objective quickly.
Or they could roleplay, be like, bro, look, I know you're using the healing potion. I will stop hitting you in the face if you give me one.
Give me those healing potions.
Just give me your healing potions.
I will not murder you.
I won't kill you anymore.
Healing potion for a life.
Exactly. See, there you go.
He already drank one, and he's like halfway through the second one, and that's like all he has. You're like, you got more healing potions, you survive, and he's like, oh shit, I ain't got no more healing potions. Oh well,
and now you're dead. And so you're in combat, right? It ends, and you just move forward. Like, you have to make sure. Especially your complex, man, that word, and spice it up just all day long. Like, you have to make sure that there's something big that happens because of it, you know? Like, yeah, there's random encounters that don't mean anything, but at the end of the day, like, that complex encounter was difficult. Like, your party went all the way out, you know? Like, they depleted all their resources. And then come to find out, like, there's really no payoff story-wise. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't only plan for one outcome, is what I'm saying. If they decide to spare the life of somebody, make it pay off. You know, if they decide to go political, like you were saying with the treaty, you know, make that pay off. Don't just have, like, the single plan, like, this combat's going to go this way no matter what. Because
I see what you're saying.
If you're doing your job, like,
it just goes back to the whole thing about being open-minded on both sides. If the players are opening their mind to other strategies, as a DM, you also have to open your mind to accept strategies made by your players. That is the game.
Yeah, exactly. It's just one of those things, you know, like, because nobody wants to do something for a long time and then not get a payoff from it. You know, they're not going to go on this crusade campaign of combat and then just go drink in a tavern because they want to, you know. But the last thing we'll get into as far as these combat encounters is everything, like Karateka was saying earlier, everything in the Monster Manual is 100% customizable, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I've listened to hundreds of people use these exact words. The core books for Dungeons and Dragons are guidelines. Guidelines. I love that.
It's you sound not very wise.
It's not rule. Yeah, thank you. Stole those words, but thank you.
TM Matthew Mercer.
Yeah. Thank you, Matthew Mercer. They're not rules set in it's not law. I mean, the game, like the rules in the player's handbook or the DMG or whatever the case may be, it's not law. You're not going to, like, actually be arrested in real life as a DM and put in jail because you did something different with their books. Like, that's what they want you to do. Like, all the creators say, even the creators at Dungeons & Dragons, Wizards of the Coast, like, they say these are guidelines for you to make badass shit out of.
Yeah. And then so as you're customizing things, like have that reflect in what the players actually encounter, you know, like if you do have a goblin tribe that the party is fighting and all that stuff. And at the end, you know, there's the goblin spellcaster who's in charge of everyone. And his bodyguard is a goblin who's the size of a dwarf. And the reason that is because you wanted his AC to be higher, so you gave him better armor, and then you doubled his hit points, kind of thing. But he's legitimately a giant goblin.
He's been hitting the fucking weight room.
Exactly.
he's been like from a young age, he was just lifting boulders, like working his biceps. And he's like, yeah, no, that puny little weak ass leather armor ain't doing it for me. Like, I can hold a shield, I can hold, you know, a giant club, I can wear plate armor, or I can wear use a great axe. Like, dude, can you imagine a goblin using a great axe? Like, it's twice the size of him.
Do I want to see a goblin in plate armor?
It's
now
super, like, anime style. Like, this tiny little goblin is running at you where, like, you know how, like, you're holding the hilt upwards and the weapon is down towards the ground and they're running just because the weapon is so massive compared to them. And he's just doing these slash attacks. Like, that's fucking awesome. Right. Why not throw it in your game? Because you can.
And you don't see that in the Monster Manual? You can't get a goblin wearing plate in the Monster Manual.
And it's like, oh, well, a goblin only has a strength of 10. Well, it doesn't have to.
Exactly. No, like you said, that goblin been hitting the gym every day of his life. All 12 years of it. He's like, just been pumping it.
Last time I checked, there's not a law that says a goblin's strength is 10. Make his freaking strength 16, 18. Depending on your like player characters, maybe it's like a high level encounter, make his fucking strength 20. Maybe he is just a, you know, goblin with the heart of a giant. Yes, and the biceps.
It's a giant soul sorcerer goblin.
Yes.
There you go. Now, okay, so buffing monsters is one thing, because you want to use some monsters against a higher level party for the story kind of thing. Like, of course you need to buff them. But let's say you want to lower the difficulty of a monster for like a lower level party. Like, what would you do personally to like lower something?
Man, there are so many ways. Let's take a dragon. You know, when people hear dragon, it's like,
it's in the name.
Yeah. So it's in the, okay. Yeah. It's in the name. Say a level 10, a party of level 10 characters encounter this dragon. They're not ready for it. But what if this dragon's on its last limb? What if, you know, say it is an evil dragon, and instead of going back to Tiamat, he stayed in the, you know, material plane, and he is thousands of years old. He's an old ass dragon, feeble.
Are you saying he has dragon cancer?
Maybe he has dragon cancer.
That's terrible.
Maybe, you know, he has some type of sickness, limits his movement, you know, limits his, what capabilities he still has. I know as dragons get older, they get stronger, but I'm talking about, you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, you're talking about dragon cancer.
Yes, dragon cancer. Or maybe this dragon just got done with a fight with another dragon. Like, he literally has claw marks all over his body. It doesn't even have to be a dragon. Maybe this dragon just had a crucial battle, claw marks all over his body. He has 30% of his max hit points. Now it becomes more of a beholder fight where it's just, you know, a fight of time. Can you down this thing before it unleashes its ungodly breath attack?
I got you. Yeah. So, like, it also makes the world feel more alive because you're coming across enemies that have already been doing shit. Like, you're not the only adventuring party around these parts, you know? Like, yeah, I like that. Like, you're going to, like, an old ancient dwarven kingdom and you're on top of the mountain and all of a sudden this dragon just skyrockets and just falls right in front of you and then he just attacks. And then for some reason, like, you're able to dispatch it even though you really shouldn't have been able to. And all of a sudden this group of adventurers comes on an airship and they're like, oh, you killed our dragon. You're like, oh my God, there's other people like us.
I feel like that's a giant, like, I feel like that's another thing that's a miscommunication. Whether, like, there's only one party of adventurers, there's only one demigod level group of people on the in the entire plane of existence that are fighting for the forces of good. Not, you know, sure, there's this villain and this villain and this villain and his whole cult and his whole cult and his giant beast, but there's one party of adventurers who are level 5 plus.
Like, I like to look at, like, the Justice League or the Avengers, stuff like that. Like, yes, they are made up of all these superheroes, but stuff happens and only Batman can take care of it because the rest of them are off doing something else. Or, you know, only Thor does this one thing because everyone else is off doing something else. Like, your world is populated with other adventurers. Like, if your adventuring party runs into them, that is not a bad thing. Because then even if they're more advanced than your player party, that shows them something to look forward to. You know, like, oh my God, we're going to be that badass soon. And it also helps you bridge that gap of, you know, all my combat encounters have to be super extensive and super weird and all this stuff. But if they're starting at level one, like, they don't need to do that. You know, your first ever combat encounter. So some reason your party falls into, like, just this vampire lair. We're talking vampire spawn, zombies, skeletons, and just this badass vampire at level one. And they're like, oh my God, we're gonna die. And then all of a sudden, just these people with golden angel wings come down and they're like the Order of the Avatar and they're like undead hunters and they like save your party. I'm like, what are you guys doing here? This is way too dangerous for you. You know, like, all of a sudden they've met another adventuring party who helped them with this way too hard combat.
It's that, like, 5-year-old moment when he sees, like, the parade of paladins coming into town in their shiny armor and their nice-ass weapons. And they're like, oh my God, I want to be just like you when I grow up.
Exactly, yeah, like, that would be such a badass first combat encounter because it shows them something that's far above their level. It puts the fear in them of, you know, trying to think tactically and stuff like that. And then they're saved by this group of adventurers that now they want to be kind of thing. And then, hey, I'm going to try that now. Don't tell anybody.
I'll try not to.
Yeah.
You know that one episode of Tavern Tussle? You can't listen to it.
Yeah, don't listen to episode 11. Episode 11 was not for you. But, Karateka, do you have any final thoughts on combat encounters? The awkward pause is back.
No, yes. No. I was legitimately thinking, just like, I'm going to steal your catchphrase, spice it up. Like, just keep it changing. Like, say you used a mage in your last encounter, use some crazy badass fighter enemy. Like, you can build your enemies. The DMG helps you. The player's handbook helps you. Just keep things changing. Keep the encounters changing. Use different traps. Make up your own traps. They have preset traps in the DMG. Like, everything is before you to make up whatever you want to. And it may seem like a lot, but if you think about it, it's not. You take a goblin, you throw plate armor on him, and boom, you've changed an encounter, and all you did was change his AC. It is super simple. Keep it simple until you don't want to and you have the knowledge to go bigger, then do so. Just remember that it's there. It's in front, like, the possibilities are endless, and make them appear that way to your group, to your DM. And yeah,
you'll pretty much get out what you put into designing these encounters. So if you take the extra time to, you know, throw in a couple traps in that one combat encounter room, you know, change the stats of those couple monsters, give them the magic items you were going to give the party, you know, doing these things, putting in the time will make the game more enjoyable for everyone at the table. And then you'll get, you know, like the back claps, like, oh, good job, DM, and blah, blah. Because the best feeling in the world is when you're a DM and your players stand up at the end of the session like, wow, like, really, really good game tonight. And you're like, yes. So, yeah. But that was our take on spicing up combat encounters. As always, you can tweet at us at Tavern Tussle. You can send us an email, taverntussle@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook at Tavern Tussle, because Tavern Tussle's where to go, folks. I'm going to get it to where we're the top Google search engine thing, because we're not, so it hurts a lot. But yeah, from the bottom of my heart, thank you very much for listening to us this week, and I hope you come back next week. And from the bottom of Karateka's cold, dark recess, where he used to have a heart, he thanks you, right? Don't you?
I definitely do.
That's right. Thank you again, and we hope you have a wonderful week.